Hello and welcome. My name is Kyle, and this is How You Level Up, a podcast that decodes language to help you become your best self. Today I speak with David Price. David's story starts from as far from success as you can get. In 2018, he jumped into insurance with zero experience, and by his own admission, he was a terrible agent. But David has something more than natural talent. He has a willingness to figure things out. Today, David runs the Price Group, which has done over $35 million in sales and helped more than 30,000 families find and use life insurance. Through the system and mentorship program that David has created at his agency, he has helped dozens of agents hit six figures, some within the first few months. David's approach is straightforward, that success isn't about being gifted, it's about showing up, staying consistent, and being willing to learn. Our conversation today talks about his early life, transparency, professionalism, resilience, and common misses in life insurance. And I hope you enjoy the conversation, because I definitely did. David, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time. So I want to dive a little bit into your personal life before we talk about some of the more professional things. You mentioned in a previous interview that you did with someone that one of the early traits that you learned was finding deals and bargains. Can you tell us what the first deal or bargain that you ever did was, and what was the profit margin on it?
That's funny, as you say. Well, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast. And, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about back in grade school selling lollipops, you know, and, you know, to me, it made so much sense, right? You buy like a whole bag of lollipops for like $2 and you sell each lollipop, I think, for like a quarter, right? You get to sell eight lollipops and you get your money back. And then after that, it's all profit. So it just sounded like a really good business model for, you know, somebody that didn't have a lot of money in grade school. But the problem is the schools, right? They don't want you to be an entrepreneur, right? They want to take your lollipops away and they want to stop you from that. But, you know, as a kid, I was really thrifty because I didn't have a lot growing up. And, you know, I had to fend for myself on a lot of things. So I would look for bargains like that, you know, stereo equipment, bicycles and stuff like that, and try to make some profits. But as far as profit margin, lollipops was it, you know, that was the best return on money. And, you know, every kid's got a 25 cents for a lollipop for sure.
Do you recall what the school said to you, or perhaps what they wanted you to do instead of trying to sell lollipops at school?
No, I mean, it was just, you know, they just didn't want you selling lollipops. You know, it was, like I said, as a kid, it's like better than drugs, right? You know, that's what it moves up to afterwards. You know, high school goes from lollipops to drugs, but, you know, I guess it's a control thing, or it's disrupting kids, or I'm stealing quarters from kids. I don't know, you know, but I guess that's, you know, that's, not everything they teach you at school makes sense. Not everything they teach you in school works in the real world. And, you know, not all teachers should probably be telling, you know, kids how to live their lives. But, you know, what did I know as a kid at that time?
You grew up the son of a single mother, and you watched your grandfather work really hard when you were young. He was a mechanic. What's one lesson that you pulled from him, your grandfather, watching him work really hard?
Yeah, you know, living with a single mother, you know, we are on welfare and other government programs to help get by, you know, live in a lot of different places. But, you know, with that, there's always like lack, right? You know, it wasn't like, you know, I didn't get my three meals a day. I didn't starve, right? But, you know, you didn't get three meals a day. And then, you know, going to my grandparents' house, it's like, you know, breakfast was a big deal, cooking eggs, pancakes, and, you know, have a good lunch, and then, you know, dinner was amazing, and you know, all matching furniture, the beds were more comfortable, right? Everything's just better. And you look at those two things, you're like, all right, you know, mom doesn't work, or, you know, we get welfare. And then my grandfather, you know, has his own business, you know, he's working really hard. So it just really teaches you that you can have what you want, you know, if you're willing to put the work in. And then, you know, another thing with my grandfather, he just always chased perfection. And it didn't matter, like anything he did, he chased perfection. And I remember I borrowed paintbrushes from him to paint some stuff. And he's like, let me show you how to wash these things when you're done. And he shows me how to wash them in his sink and everything like that. And like, I still couldn't wash them to his standard. When I joined the military, and he's like, oh, bring me some boots. I'll show you how to polish them. Like, there's no way in the world I could have like polished my boot. Like, he polished my boots. I had them on for weeks and they got called out for being like, you gotta have boots like Price. Look at his boots. I'm like, dude, these things are dirty compared to what they were. So everything he did, he just did like to the highest standard, and he always chased perfection. And that's something I learned. And, you know, I didn't have that trait younger, but it's something I still can't do it to his level. But it's definitely something that's on my mind when I do things. If you're going to do it, you might as well like chase perfection with it.
Did you join the military as the first person in your family to do so? Or did you learn that from somebody else, that idea of service?
Yeah. So my grandfather was in the military. He was, he first joined the Marines, but he actually lied about his age and joined the Marines. And when his mother found out, got him kicked out.
Oh, no.
And then the minute he was old enough to join the Army, I know it's crazy, right? But he was, you know, running from something, and, you know, he wasn't happy with his childhood and he wanted to make some of himself. And then when he was old enough, he joined the Army, and he was in the Army for 3 years and, you know, ended up getting married and you know, decided, you know, to be a family person and have to get out. And so he did it. I don't know if I did it after him. I think for me, you know, I was struggling with drugs a little bit at that time. And I was really comfortable. I was like 20 years old, and you know, I had a jet ski, I had a four wheeler, I had a car I was really proud of. You know, I had my own apartment. Well, I had a roommate, but apartment. I felt like I always had money. Like I felt like I was just like comfortable, and I was like, man, you know, I gotta do something, because like it's cool like what I'm doing as a 20 year old, but I don't want to be a 30 year old living like this, right? I need somewhere. I was like delivering pizzas, right? You know, and so I joined the military to really shake things up and just, you know, force myself to do something. So I think it was more had to do with me. And then also, you know, like I said, I was strong with drugs, and it was time to make a change in my life. I always wanted big things in my life, but I knew I just couldn't just sit where I was at, or things weren't going to go well.
One of the reasons why I went into the Marine Corps was because I noticed that I needed to shape up. And it sounds like that was a similar path for you. You know, in some of my research, when looking into your background, you have described yourself as a previously functional drug addict. And, you know, when you're a functional drug addict, you end up lying and cheating a lot, not because it's malicious, but just because that's sort of the habit of, I need to get my fix, or I need to seek out some adrenaline. And that's sometimes what the drug does, or sometimes it just calms you down, right? It depends if you're seeking an upper or a downer. Regardless, how is it that you are able to be so successful in the insurance industry and still be so vulnerable and share that story of once being a functional drug addict? How do you correlate those two of, I need to be professional all the time, and yet I have hit rock bottom before, and this is what it looked like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I got clean in 2013, and it was the last time I drank or did any type of drug. And at that time, my addiction was really personal. The only people I shared my addiction with were other addicts that I knew of. And it was mostly like that until maybe 2020-ish. So I got my insurance license in 2018. I made my first million in my first 36 months. So that would have been May of 21. And then 22, I actually made $1 million in a single year. And it wasn't until that time, until I started having success, that I started sharing my addiction. And it was for exactly what you say. So people judge, whether they want to judge, should judge, people judge. Even if they don't want to, they're judging. And I knew I wanted to be successful. And if I'm like, yeah, you know, a year ago I was doing drugs, or 2 years I was going to do drugs, like in a normal person's mind, which I don't blame them, which is right, is, oh, this person's gonna be doing drugs again, right? I mean, 9 out of 10 heroin addicts never recover. So it's very normal for somebody to tell you they're clean and then not be clean next time you see them.
Yeah.
And so for me, but once I started having the success, then it was different. Now I was like, all right, I'm having success. I need to share with the world that it doesn't matter where you're at, how messed up your life is, what you're struggling with. Like, I was there too. And this can be the result, right? It's where I feel like I'm far enough away from it, where I could be more vocal about my past and still get the respect that I need. Because it's not about wanting the respect or needing the respect. It's about somebody respecting my story enough that they can change their life. And I wanted to make sure I had that. So that's why I wasn't vocal about it until I had a really good track record.
Yeah, it's almost like you wanted to temper some of the judgment. And as much as we want to, people judge us, regardless if they're even aware of it. So that's understandable. Are there certain things in the 12-step program? I'm presuming you also did a 12-step program, yes?
Correct.
Are there similarities for this 12-step program to be sober, to work towards being sober, and some of the things that you apply in your professional life? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, 100%. When I come down to a business decision and I have a hard time making a business decision, I literally go back to the principles I learned in a 12-step program, you know, and I really, you know, so I went to my first 12-step program meeting. My mom was going to meetings. So I was in meetings as a kid, but like, to me, those people were all weak-minded. They needed this. I didn't need this. I knew what I was doing. They didn't. I had to control my addiction. I could stop tomorrow. They can't. Right. That was like my thought process. And actually, when I went to my first 12-step meeting, I went as a supporter in my head. My girlfriend was struggling with drugs. I'm like, dude, you have a problem. Maybe these people at the 12-step meeting can help you. Meanwhile, I didn't own a car. I'm sleeping on my grandma's couch. Like, my life's a freaking mess. But in my head, I had control. So we took a taxi to the meeting. I'm sitting in the meeting. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'm just crying. I just start crying like crazy. I'm like, what the heck is going on? At that time, I didn't know. Now I feel like, you know, God was just kind of like waking me up. Like, dude, your life's a mess. These people can help you. Like, stay right here. Shut your mouth. Open your ears and listen, you know, and take the suggestions. And up to then, I wouldn't really take suggestions. But someone said, there's a couple of cool things that I learned. One, someone said, your best thinking got you here. And I'm like, holy crap, right? So then you start thinking about that. And I think about that like all the time. I tell, you know, my agents, it's like, listen, if you're making 100 grand a year and you want to make more, guess what? Your best thinking got you to where you're at, like making 100 grand a year. So if you want to make more than that, you need some new information. You need to be doing some different things. So that works from, you know, making $1 million a year, making 100K a year, making 10 grand a year, or, you know, being homeless, addicted to drugs. It works with all of it. So the ability to humble myself and ask for help and learn from other people, you know, that all came from the 12-step program. And because of that, I was able to have success, because before, some minor successes in my life, but nothing like what I'm having now. And the biggest difference is, usually in my life, I would have like some kind of success, and it would be the same. Nothing would change over years. Like, it would just be like something, like, you know, basically like getting by, where, you know, every year since I've been clean, my life's been getting drastically, like exponentially better year over year. Because no matter what, I mean, like I said, I'm a, you know, millionaire in the insurance industry, but I tell people, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'll tell other insurance professionals that are way more successful and have been doing it longer than me. I'm like, well, wait till I figure this thing out. I still don't know what I'm doing. And that's the mindset I'm always going to keep, because the minute I think I know what I'm doing, I'm stuck.
I'm hearing part of what you're saying is also, you still feel an imposter syndrome. And I can't help but think that that is an aspect of someone who has hit rock bottom that doesn't ever go away. Do you feel that way?
I think it's just more of, if you're in the mindset that you don't know what you're doing, you, like, I guess the easiest way is, you know, the glass, right? When the glass is full, you can't add anything to it. Like, for me, I want to dump my glass out, you know? And the way I do that is, even when I first started the insurance business, my goal was pretend I knew nothing for the first year. And we all know great things, right? We all know some stuff. I knew something. There's some kind of skill in life I had that would have helped me sell insurance. But if I'm working on that or doing those things, I don't have a chance to learn something new. So I wanted to learn as much as I can. So I took everything I know. I threw it in the closet, pretended I didn't. Even if it was common sense, I still played dumb for my first year. And then you take that other stuff out. And that's what I teach people. Like, listen, you're new to this business. Obviously, you're here because there's something you don't like. There's something more that you want. you know, amazing things. I'm not taking anything away from you, but take all those amazing things you know, or the things you think you know, because that may change too. Throw that in the closet, lock it up for a year, learn everything we could teach you, right? Learn, listen, don't talk, don't tell me about what you've done and the success you have, learn. And then at the end of the year, take everything you've learned and then add that with the stuff that you have. And that's how you'll have a ton of success.
Let's go back to a specific week in 2018, where you drove over 1,000 miles, hitting more than 30 appointments, and you made 0 sales. And you were eating fast food in your car. You spent your last dollar on gas. Most people would have quit. Even your history of knowing you can hit rock bottom, being an addict before, trying to get sober, trying to make it. What is the conversation that you had with yourself that week when you had all of those failed appointments? I mean, you're driving a lot. You've got to be talking to yourself. What are you saying?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's 2018 when I got my insurance license. I mean, I would say that's probably one of the hardest years of my life. But I knew it would be hard. And I think, you know, a lot of times people want to be entrepreneurs and they want to be business owners. And for some reason, they don't realize that first year is going to be hell. Or if you want to be successful, it's going to be hell. If it's not hell, you're not working hard enough. You're not trying hard enough. And I knew that, and I definitely understood that. So yes, doesn't mean the thing didn't suck, but in my head, it was like, all right, this is just part of the process. This is something I have to go through so I can teach other people have to go through. Like, it's going to get better. You know, if I stop now, I have no chance. You know, so it's just a matter of like really just understanding what is being in a business owner. And I think the IRS, I think it's what, 4 years, you know, 4 years you could tell them I made no money. Like, you start a business and tell the IRS you made no money at all for 4 years and it doesn't even lift the red flag. Like, they're like, yeah, I know, you're a business owner. That's normal, right? You know, where typically the IRS is like, all right, hold on a second. You know, you own a business, you definitely made money. You can't say you made no money, but your first 4 years, you can do that because it's a normal thing. So for me, that was my thought process. Like, for my first 4 years, I'm going to learn the dollars I make, I'm going to put back into the business. It's going to suck. It's going to be uncomfortable. I want to get more activity than ever. So instead of, you know, getting 4 years worth of work done in 4 years, let's see if I can get 12 years worth of work done in 4 years. Let's see if I can get way further down the line. So it's just a matter of, you know, setting up expectations with yourself ahead of time and understanding, like, dude, you know what? Sleeping on the couch and watching TV all day sucks too. Like, there's everything sucks, you know, at some point. So it's just a matter of like, choose your suck. At least this suck is going to get you where you want to go.
Yeah, the choosing your suck, it feels so, it feels like that's coming from the military part of you, where, you know, life is shitty and you just have to pick what is going to be the shitty thing that you enjoy doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're the Marine, so my hat's off to you, because you guys have it way harder than the Army does. You know, it's funny, my grandma kind of judged me for joining the Army instead of the Marines. I was like, man, I don't want to work that hard. I wrestled like most of my life. I was like, man, I don't want to work that hard. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, we did some sucky stuff. You guys did some really sucky stuff. And that's definitely, but again, like I understand it now. It's like, because when you're in the military, like, guess what? When that time comes, things are really going to suck. And you need to know how to just drive forward no matter what. And, you know, when they make you want to take rocks off one side of the sidewalk and put rocks on the other side of the walk all day, you're like, this makes no sense. Why am I doing this? It's getting you ready for when something really important happens that you got to keep moving forward.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with somebody recently, and even in boot camp, I mean, regardless of the branch that you're in, even in boot camp, you don't know why you're doing all of the shitty things that they force you to do. And then only towards the end of training do you recognize, oh, I'm bear crawling everywhere because I need to be able to handle the weight of the sack on my back and be low to the ground and move quickly. And those things aren't obvious when you're feeling really shitty. And I think part of this ties into building resilience. You clearly have built a lot of internal resilience for stress, for high pressure situations. What are some of the things that you do to build up your resilience?
Grew up in a broken childhood. It's simple. You know, it's funny because, you know, I used to think that, man, I lost the, you know, the gene pool lottery, and, you know, I was born to, you know, drug addicted parents, and, you know, you go to school and you got some friends that got boats and live on the water and stuff like that. You're like, man, how come I didn't grow up to that, right? That's what I want. And then I look at where they're at now, and I look at where I'm at now, and I start looking at my successes. I'm like, man, you know, why am I successful? And it's business. Being a business owner is going to be full of adversity. And I deal with a lot of other business owners, and a lot of them shut down when adversity becomes too great, and everyone has their threshold. But for me, you know, I've always dealt with adversity since the minute I was born. And so, you know, that uncomfortable feeling is just, oh, okay, like, this is a normal feeling to me. So for me, it wasn't something I had to, you know, practice or do. It's just something that, you know, luckily I was born with, right? So I guess I did win the gene pool lottery after all. But if you didn't get to grow up in a broken childhood and have a bunch of adversity when you're young, I think the simplest and easiest thing is, again, another something you learn in a 12-step program is, no matter what's going on, just take one foot, you know, one step in front of the other, you know. A lot of times when people get uncomfortable is they stop. When you stop, nothing good ever happens from stopping. So it's like you're in the mud and you need to get out, and you could stay there and sink, which isn't going to be the desired result you want. Or you just like, okay, it sucks. You're dirty, you're muddy, it's cold, it's wet. So might as well take some steps forward and work on getting out of this. So that would be my best advice to give anyone that is dealing with any kind of adversity in their life, is like, just the answer is never not do nothing. That's definitely never not the answer.
So speaking of not doing nothing, you walked away from $2 million in annual income to build up the Price Group as an independent IMO. First off, can you please explain what an IMO is to the listeners, how it works? And then can you share the conversation that you had with your partner when you told them that you want to do this and step away from the money that you were making?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, first off, IMO is an independent marketing organization. And typically what the independent marketing organization does is they get contracted with the insurance carriers. So some you probably heard of, like Aetna, Mutual of Omaha, Transamerica. You know, so if someone wanted to sell insurance, typically those carriers don't want to deal with you directly. They want you to deal with the IMO, and then they'll deal with the IMO. So that's what we do. So contract with all the major carriers. And then what we do is we provide leads. We provide training resources, training platforms, coaching, mentorship, everything an insurance agent would need to be successful. And different IMOs are going to do different levels of that. We think we're really hands-on and above most of them. You know, just making sure that they have the tools to succeed, and we could guide them through that process. So when I got my insurance license, I did work directly with one carrier for most of my career. And I guess the simplest, most polite way to put it is our values stopped aligning. And even though our values stopped aligning, well, I was on pace to make $2 million in 2024. 2023 made 1.5 million, 2022 made 1.1 million, right? So it was going up. Exactly. Life was good. It was passive. I mean, you're talking about over 100K in your bank account every single month. And when our values weren't aligning, I knew I had to make a change. So it wasn't really a conversation. Technically, for my contract, I should have been an independent agent, and what I did shouldn't have mattered, but I added other insurance carriers to work with. And when I did that and they immediately stopped my pay, and that was it. Went from, you know, making 100 grand a month to zero on a Friday. So it was definitely uncomfortable, but again, our values didn't align. So that was something I pretty much predicted, even though, like I said, there was no contractual reason for them to do that or anything. But I was willing to go through that because, you know, all through my life in battling with addiction and different things that I've done, anytime that I stepped in faith and anytime that I didn't let fear hold me back and anytime that I did what was right, where, you know, wasn't a money related decision, life got better. And, So I took the chance, and that was 10 months ago. And we're on pace to have a really, really good year this year. I believe next year I'll be right back past where I was before. That took me 7 years to get to. So don't regret the decision at all. Doing, I'm happier than ever, and our agents are way more successful with this new platform that we have versus the old platform, which is the most important part to me, is helping them.
What about your significant other? What did they say on that Friday when you were like, oh, I guess I'm not pulling in any more money right now?
Yeah, we had the conversation ahead of time, and, okay, let her know what I thought would happen, how I thought it would play out. And I think, when it comes to business and business decisions, I think she has a lot of respect for me. I think she does really good. I feel like significant others sometimes, that's a harder thing for them to I feel like they lose the respect on that. And not that they don't respect, but they don't, for her, it's like absolute. Like, it's like, hey, this is what we're going to do for business, or this is what I say. Like, she's just 100%. On the business aspect, bought in. Personal stuff, maybe not as much, but on the business aspect, definitely bought in on that. So she was all in. It wasn't a question about it. And I think she's a lot happier now too. She definitely is.
Yeah, she trusts in you, and that's what matters. Most CEOs would never publicly share when they restart from zero, how much they're losing in their first month. And yet you did. You had stated publicly that, in the first month of the Price Group, I think it was $282,900 negative, right? And so, or to some extent of that point. And why choose that radical transparency when you're starting up the IMO?
Yeah, a lot of times people mention to me that the reason they follow me or the reason they want to work with me is because I'm transparent. I know for me, I like transparency. When I, for instance, let's say, I'm paying you for coaching, or you're mentoring me to teach me how to do something, or maybe you're leading me, right, as a Marine. And the more I trust you, the easier it is for me to follow you, And the more vulnerable you are with me, then I'm like, man, this guy's willing to tell me the truth about anything. Right. And so it increases the trust. So I learned that the more vulnerable I am, the more honest and transparent I am, the more people trust me. And the more they trust me, the more effective I could be as a leader. And to me, that's the main goal, because it's not that I want to lead people. It's, the more effective I'm as a leader, the more successful, more success people will have around me. And that's the goal. It's like, how do I help the agents that want me to lead them be successful? Well, I need to build trust. How do I build trust? Vulnerable, honest, transparent, and that builds trust. And then hopefully that trust means they'll be coachable, do the things you ask them to do, and then have the success, and then increase the trust from there.
Speaking of being coachable or coaching people, you lean heavily on the idea in the Price Group that mentorship is foundational. And so who was it that was a great mentor, not a bad one, but a great mentor to you? And what skills or lessons did they teach you, or perhaps you just observed and then vicariously learned them?
Yeah. So actually, my sponsor in a 12-step program, Carl, and he taught me that basically you always want to build bridges with people. There's every relationship you have to treat differently, and if there's a disagreement between me and you, or me and somebody else, or I'm trying to get a point across, well, I have to choose my words wisely, because there's certain things I could say that's going to push that person away further. I might be right still. Like, I could say these things and it's 100% right, or at least right in my mind, but it may push that person away. And if it pushes that person away, it doesn't help get the desired result. Right. So sometimes you have to look at, like, what is the desired result and what's the action that needs to be taken to get that result. And, the one thing he's taught me is just like, always lead with love. And if you do that, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah. Love seems to be a very strong, what's the term I'm looking for here? Love is a very strong facet in like the jewel of the 12-step program, where leading with love is the best way to be not just with your personal relationships, but it seems also professional. And the only reason I know this is because I have a couple of friends who are addicts. They're sober, and they always sort of harp on this idea of love too. Have you seen other CEOs or professional leaders that you look up to that do this in a slightly different way? And if so, what is that way that you've seen and you recognize it and you go, oh, that's me leading with love. It's the same thing.
Yeah. You know, I have some friends, obviously, in the insurance business. Technically they're competitors, right? But, you know, we collaborate and we talk and listen and stuff. And, you know, I look at the way they lead and, you know, so, you know, we use some simple terms, love, but the goal is provided value, right? When you're providing enough value to people, they're going to want to stay with you. They're going to want to work with you. So I watched that, you know, someone, a good friend of mine, Edward, he runs a really large insurance business. And yeah, same thing. I look at how he treats his agents. I look at the relationships he builds with his agents. And yeah, same thing. He's trying to provide so much value to this agent that his agent's never going to want to work with anyone else besides him. And I can see it, you know, and even in our friendship, you know, I feel like he provides a ton of value to me as a friend, and I try to provide a ton of value back as well. And I guess that's something that really changed, you know, pre 12-step program, or, you know, pre being sober. I was always trying to take, right? Like, always just trying to have like the edge, you know, where it's like, hey, you know, we're going to go split the bill for dinner. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, well, I'm going to get a steak, you know, and you're like, you got a burger. So I'm like, oh, I got a better deal on that because he paid for part of my steak because the steak was more. Where it's like the opposite now. It's like, I want to make sure I'm always giving more than I'm receiving. And I've learned with that simple principle, you actually end up getting way more than when you're trying to figure out how to take from people.
When it comes to your, the price group and mentoring, you've done a lot of interviews, you've taught a lot of people, provided a lot of value. What are some of the things that you look for when interviewing in the price group? You've got this two-step process, but when it used to be you interviewing and looking for candidates, what are the things that you looked for that told you this is the right candidate? I want them on my team.
You know, when I first started in this business, it was, you know, find people with good personalities, with, you know, that silver tongue, good salespeople. And then what I started learning is that the people that were having success with me didn't have a silver tongue, weren't salespeople, had no experience. They were just regular people, and they just had more heart, right? They were just more coachable, had more heart, were more optimistic, and were willing to put in the work and the time to be successful. So when I'm interviewing someone, it's hard because you can't measure the heart, right? You can listen to them. They can tell you all the best things in the world. They're going to do this. They're going to do this. They're going to do this. They know this. They know this, you know, and you're like, oh man, this sounds great. And so many times I'd be so excited about this person, but I realized, you know, a lot of it's just talk. You know, majority of people in this world, unfortunately, don't even do the things they say they're going to do, nevertheless, the things you ask them to do. So I learned that. So realistically, I'm just trying to see, do you align with my core values? Are you someone I want to work with? Like, would I hang out with you? Would I go to dinner with you? You know, would I invite you to my place? And really, you know, if those things align, then I'm going to take a chance on you. You know, if you come and you're, you know, stuck on your ways and you seem like someone I wouldn't even want to hang out with or talk to, then I probably don't want to work with you. Even if you sound like the best, even if you show me some sales trophies, like it's, that stuff doesn't even do anything for me anymore, because I've had so many bad experiences with people like that.
From those bad experiences, what were some of the tricks or perhaps the slight reframing of their language that you attempted to help them to become more successful and they just weren't getting it?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, you know, people want to make it like this Wolf of Wall Street, like kind of high pressure sales tactic or culture, and that stuff's like cool for the movies maybe, but like ultimately, like, we're helping people with insurance, we're helping people fill out an application and make good decisions about what product and amount of coverage they should have. And I feel like the more natural that conversation is, like, the better it's for everyone, right? You know, I mean, think about this, like, you know, we're dealing with people 60 plus typically, that need something in place for when they pass away. They don't need you with these high pressure sales tactics and, you know, pushing them. Like, no, like you just need to be educating them. You need to be answering their questions. You need to be asking questions, right? Finding out how to help them and then finding something in their budget. You know, don't just try to sell them something that they can't afford, because the beautiful thing about insurance is it typically pays you for the entire life of the insurance policy. So you want that policy to stay on the books for a long time. So I think you know, I would say the difference between a successful and unsuccessful agent is just, you know, they look like they're talking to their grandmother versus they look like you're trying to sell an insurance policy to a stranger.
So diving into some of those insurance pieces, that asking questions to the customer, finding out what it is that they need, what are some of the common things that people often miss when it comes to insurance?
I think, you know, one of the common things is for like a newer agent, they deal with objections a lot. Like, you're gonna deal with objections. The thing with life insurance is it's not something they get to use, right? Like, you know, you go to the car dealership, you're excited, you get to drive a new car. Maybe your old car was giving you trouble. Maybe you didn't have a car and you need wheels. Like, there's something like exciting about that you get to use, where, you know, if I go buy an insurance policy that's going to cost me $100 a month, I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I hope somebody enjoys it, because I don't get to enjoy this. I'm going to be, you know, dead and when the time comes. So because of that, there's no rush in getting it. And obviously people think they're going to live forever, right? You know, hopefully I got another 30, 40, 50, maybe 80 more years, whatever it is, you know, in me. So I can get insurance next year, next week, there's no rush. So it's just about really just helping them get it over with, you know, and helping them find something that's going to fit them. And sometimes you have to, you know, talk through them a little bit and help them get through the procrastination that they're attempting to do with you.
Yeah, I've got a to-do list for the house that I just moved into, and I'm definitely procrastinating on this list. There is just so many things. Got to go get a vent, got to go change some of the sockets, covers for outlets. Life insurance is definitely not something that you want to procrastinate on.
No, I mean, the truth is we all have somebody that passed away too young. We all do, right? You know, you just don't know. There's no guarantee to wake up and the next day. And the problem is, you know, if you end up passing away and you don't have some kind of plan in place, like, you're hurting the ones the closest to, because they're the ones that got to pick up the pieces. They're already a wreck because they lost you, right? So they're emotionally a wreck, and now they're freaking trying to figure out financially how to deal with everything. So it's definitely not ideal. We all know we're going to pass away. And we all know that the sooner we take care of it, the less it costs, right? You know, you get an insurance policy in your 30s, it costs way less than when you're in your 70s and you got diabetes and you got some other health conditions. So you might as well get it taken care of sooner than later.
So you wake up at 5 a.m. every day saying your morning routine determines your entire life. But that level of discipline, it seems at odds with viewing business as a hobby, which I think that's how you view your business. It's a hobby that you love, and that's why you're excited to do it every day. How do you reconcile your intense discipline with your creative play at work?
You know, I typically wake up, like you said, at 5, sometimes 4, sometimes 3. So the one thing I've been doing for a while now is not using an alarm clock. So I may use an alarm clock once or twice a year, typically. Wow. Just if I have a stupid early flight or something where I got to be up at 3 o'clock and obviously can't miss the flight. But the goal is never to use an alarm clock. But with that, I'm typically up before 5 o'clock. And the reason I don't use an alarm clock is, you know, I believe that the body, or not believe, but the body needs sleep to rest, or needs to sleep to, you know, do everything it needs to do to repair itself and make sure you're ready to attack the next day. So waking yourself up in the middle of that makes no sense if you really think about it. So I want to wake up naturally, so I know I'm at the peak state of restedness that I need to be so I could attack the day. Now, once those eyes open, right, there's no rolling around, there's no laying back down, there's no, like, it's time to get up. And to me, I look at every new day as an opportunity, and I'm usually excited. Like, I think about like playing video games. Like, I don't know, you know, when I play video games, I'm just so excited to like unlock that next level. Like, what's the next level look like? What happens when I get this? Or, you know, sometimes it was like when you leveled up, you got more powers or more potions, or they got these other things. And like, that's just how it is for business for me. It's just like, man, what can I get done today? Like, what can I accomplish today? What new records can we break today? You know, who can we help? You know, and then I'm seeing the agents have more success, and I'm seeing, you know, we keep evolving our lead program, and these agents are loving leads because the clients are calling them directly now, and they don't have to call the clients or not to call them as much. So just all of it, it's just been a really good time. You know, I've done so many different jobs in my life, and this is, I'm addicted to it. I love it, but I'm like, what else would I do? Like, what, watch TV, like watch a movie, you know? So it's definitely, I mean, don't get me wrong, I will watch like a movie or two on the weekend, in the evening, but the TV won't go on during the week. And I live a long part of my life where I sat on the couch and watched TV every day after I got home from work. And like, that was my life, right? But like, I was miserable. I didn't know I was miserable, but I was just basically surviving.
You once said that you would want to have breakfast with Elon Musk to understand how he manages his time. Given your journey from poverty to addiction to building an eight-figure business, what do you think Elon Musk could learn from you?
I don't know, man. That guy's doing a lot of things. Maybe some health stuff. Maybe I don't know how healthy he is, right? Maybe I went plant-based probably about a year ago now. Went plant-based. Never thought I'd go plant-based. I was definitely like, oh, plant-based is dumb. But again, just like everything else in life, you start getting new information. You're like, you know what? Let me try that. So I went plant-based, and I get blood work every quarter, and my blood's work, you know, everything's looking better every quarter. So that's really cool to see that. So I will continue to eat plant-based. I follow Brian Johnson, right? The don't die guy, and eat a lot of the supplements that he has and things like that. But yeah, I mean, as far as business, I mean, that guy's pretty amazing. I mean, he's running multiple huge, amazing companies. And just seeing, you know, same thing. I look at him, like he must look at like a video game as well. I mean, they talk about him sleeping on the desk at his office and, you know, sleeps crashing at people's couches. And, you know, it's really cool too. One thing is you see, like, he's not into just like, you know, buying like Mr. Beast. I think he said it too. He's like, you know, he's like not excited about buying a bigger box, like talking about a house. Like, he's like that does nothing for him. Where he's like, Mr. Beast is way ahead for, you know, his mentality at the age that he's at. You know, at least Elon's got some time. You know, Elon did used to buy exotic cars and stuff like that. But yeah, no, it's definitely, I feel like I would do more learning. Matter of fact, I'd probably make it a purpose to only ask questions and not say one thing about me, because I wouldn't want to talk about myself, because I want to learn as much as I can. And the minute I'm talking about myself, I'm not learning anything. So I'd probably try to make that conversation with me asking questions the entire time. So if he was going to learn something, it would be something he observed about something I was doing. It wouldn't be something I said, that's for sure.
So I have one more question for you. And it's a question that I'd like you to pose to the audience. What is something that they could ask that would help them level up?
You know, the biggest thing that I see people when they're stuck, right? And, you know, I guess we really want to ask them questions to help them, because I feel like that's when you could really help someone, is when you ask them a question and make them think about it. The biggest thing is, like, you know, are you truly happy with your current situation, or did your current situation happen and you settled for it? You know, and I realized the majority of my life, I wasn't actually ever really doing what I wanted to do. In my head, I was super happy because it was like an opportunity that came, and I thought that was a great, or that was the best I could do. So I was excited about it. But really what I know now is, like, I just settled because, you know, I was in my 30s, and I realized there's nothing in my life I've actually done that was going to help me achieve the goals I had when I was a kid. And I feel like when you're a kid, like whatever those goals that you wanted when you're a kid, whatever that was, like now's the time to find the vehicle that's going to give that to you. And chances are, I'm willing to guess, most people, you know, aren't doing that. And that's what I realized about myself when I started looking for a different business opportunity and, you know, stumbled on insurance. I never knew insurance would be the vehicle to do it, but it checked all the boxes. It lets me work where I want, with who I want, and do whatever I want, you know, and that was it. Like, I wanted those three things. I wanted a chance to be able to own exotic cars and live on, you know, live in a high rise or have a mansion, like, you know, have whatever you want, go on vacations, not be tied down, not have to ask a boss for some time off. So it's really like, you know, valuing your situation and just realizing, like, you know, is this the platform or are you doing the things that you need to do to get to, you know, whatever goals you have when you were, you know, you were that naive child that, you know, had big goals that weren't held back by fear and the things that, you know, the world tells you that you can do.
It's beautiful. David, thank you for joining us today. If anybody wanted to reach out, I'll have some links in the show notes, but what do you prefer?
Yeah, you can find me on most socials, Instagram, David Price Official, YouTube, David Price Official, LinkedIn, David Price Official, Facebook, David Price Official. So those are all great ways to reach out to me, follow me, and hopefully I provide you some value. If there's anything I could ever help with someone, whether it's with addiction or business, feel free to reach out and I'll do my best to give good and honest, clear advice.
Thank you for listening to How You Level Up. If you're enjoying the show, subscribe and give a 5-star rating. There are new episodes each month asking questions about timeless communication lessons. Language is a medium for sharing, and the knowledge unpacked here can be applied to anyone, anywhere, facing any challenge. If there's a question or topic you'd like me to dive into next, send a note to any of my connected social media accounts. This is all about how you level up.